you could have never told me that I would feel this way about myself, you know, because I love myself today. And that is something that was so far from where I came from. So to kind of just calm myself down, I'm going to, my sponsor had given me all this stuff to read and the basic text. And this short paragraph, it really spoke to me, so I would like to read it. Today, we have the freedom of choice. As we work the program to the best of our ability, the obsession with self is removed. Much of our loneliness and fear is replaced by the love and security of the fellowship. Helping a suffering addict is one of the greatest experiences life has to offer. We are willing to help. We have had similar experiences and understand fellow addicts as no one else can. We offer hope, for we know that a better way of life is now real for us. And we give love because it was so freely given to us. New frontiers are open to us as we learn how to love. Love can be the flow of life energy from one person to another. By caring, sharing, and praying for others, we become a part of them. Through empathy, we allow addicts to become part of us. And that paragraph, I mean, it just means so much. I'm going to just tell my story so you can understand how my story has helped other people, and maybe it'll help somebody today, because that's what it's really about. And if you're new, you know, keep coming back. If this is your first convention, keep coming back. I grew up north of Baltimore. I grew up in Carroll County in a little small suburb, and the outward appearance of my life was very good. You know, I had two parents that were married. We had everything that we needed. I have an older brother, and, you know, on the outside it was good. My father molested me from when I was a little girl until I was older, and before I even used drugs, I hated myself. You know, I felt like, you know, I had this sign on my head that said, use me for sex, you know, and that's how I lived my life. And when I told my best friend, you know, that I was being molested and I wanted to kill myself. And she, you know, she told her mom, and her mom told my mother, and when my mom pulled me up, I was scared. I was really scared. And I don't remember much about the conversation, but what I remembered is that my mom said, don't say those things. You know, your father could lose his job. You know, and I just remember, and she said, he loves you. And it hurt me. You know, it hurt me so bad because, you know, that's what I thought was love, you know, and I felt like the pain that of my father doing that to me, my mom, you know, not validating me with that, it was just as bad. And when I have to, and, you know, have to say today, I love my mother, and I know my mom did the best that she could, because what I understand now, you know, is that if my father was doing that to me, like, what was he doing to her? You know, and I know more about my mom's story, you know, and I what I learned in the 6th and 7th step is everybody's got issues, you know what I mean? Everybody struggles, you know, everybody has their demons, and everybody's got a 4-step too. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has those patterns and those experiences that have happened to them that made them who they are, and even my father. You know, he's got a sickness too. Just like me, my father has a sickness too. And you know, today, I don't hate my father like I used to. I really don't. So back to my story. When I started, it was shortly after that I found drugs. Thank God I found drugs. You know, because I was able to, like, survive, really. Like, it was a survival. I was like, whoo, this is good, you know? And I just, you know, I didn't know what I was doing when I first got high. I was with this guy, and he said, you know, you smoke pot? Yeah. I didn't smoke pot every day of my life. And I just, you know, every drug he said he did, I said I did that too. I remember one time, I'm not going to do a drug log, but I'm just going to say, I remember one time he said, you want to go down Reisterstown Road and get some dope? I'm like, sure. And I came home, I couldn't understand why I was itching so much. You know, it was just like, you know, I don't know. I used a lot. And by the time I was out of high school, I was tired of finding the ways and means to get more. Waking up, you know, trying to figure out whose house I was going to break into today, who am I going to con out of some money. And I was just tired of finding the ways and means to get more. And I knew, like, I had this moment, because my mom had found out what was going on, because she lived in denial. And, I mean, nobody smoked cigarettes in the house, but my room was always smoky. You know, I mean, I don't know, but whatever. You know, that's my mom. It's all good. She did the best she could. So she found out what was going on, and I knew she was having this phone conversation, and I went outside the door, and I prayed. I prayed to God, and I just prayed up into the sky, and I was like, I knew I needed some help. And when my mom approached me, I said, I need some help. You know, and that was my first time, you know, trying in this program. And I went to a treatment center, and I went to my first meeting, you know, and I heard the message, and I kept coming back, okay? I kept coming back. I didn't get it the first time. I went to the treatment center. I got out. I went to meetings. Sometimes I would go to meetings high. Sometimes I would go and I would find somebody after the meeting so we could go get high afterwards. But I kept coming back. I eventually got 2.5 years in the program, and I got a sponsor and I had a home group, but I really didn't apply the principles to my life. I really didn't work on anything. I was in a sick relationship, you know, where that man was my higher power, and I was so insecure. You know, and I really wasn't addressing my core issues that I addressed this time. And I had an eating disorder. And eventually I picked up again. And I used, and it got worse quicker. And this time I started stripping. I started prostituting myself. You know, I was staying down West Baltimore, and I was just, you know, I had these friends. And we would do these robberies together. And one time... And when I was doing the 2.5 years in the program, I was going to school, right? So I had done some things, and I was going to school to be a teacher. And I was doing really well, and I was in my last year when I started to, when I relapsed. It was the summer before my last year of college, and I was student teaching in an elementary school in the day, you know, and I was a prostitute and a crackhead by night. You know, and this one night we did this. I set up this robbery, okay, and the guys that came up with this guy I was prostituting with, and I told him where he kept his money, and they came up there and they got his money, and they took my money too. Oh, man. I'm like, shit. I guess I'll go home tonight. I'm not going back to West Baltimore. So I went home and I went to school the next day, and you know, it's good I can laugh about it today because it is kind of funny. But I went to school the next day, and they called me to the principal's office, and they arrested me for being involved in that robbery. And I remember walking out in, you know, handcuffs, and I looked back, and the little girl, one of the girls in the class, was walking down the hallway, and she saw me. You know, and all I could think about was, how can I get one more? You know, it wasn't enough. Like, that humiliation was not enough. And that's when I got I went to jail, and I got 5 months. And I just, all I could think about the whole time in there was, how was I going to get one more? And I got out, and that's what I did. And 2.5 weeks later, thank God, you know, thank God, I was locked up again. I was locked up again, and my grandmother passed away. And my family said they were gonna, the police were going to escort me in shackles and handcuffs to the viewing. And I couldn't understand, see, I couldn't understand why my family didn't want me there. Because I needed to say, pay respects to my grandmother. Today, see, so I have empathy. I understand that they didn't want me there. You know, that the pain of losing my grandmother was bad enough that they didn't need to have me and all my, you know, drama. They didn't need to have me there. And what I've learned through working some more steps, working the 8th and 9th step, is that some of my family members, my grandmother's, my aunts, they still are upset with me. You know, they still will not talk to me. They wouldn't come to my wedding. You know, they don't invite me to family gatherings. They don't want anything to do with me because of what I did to the family. But you know what? I understand that today. I understand that that's where they are, you know, and all I can do is, you know, just keep doing what I'm doing. I understand that they don't want to invite me into their lives, and that's okay. You know what? Because NA has blessed me with other people that are my family, you know, and I have other family members that I can show up for today. You know, and they can show up for me. It's so crazy, right? Because I had one of my aunts that doesn't want anything to do with me, my Aunt Diane. Today, one of my sponsees, her mother's name is Diane, and her mother watches my baby girl. And it's crazy because, like, my Aunt Diane, she watched the kids in the family. Like, she would, so they didn't have to go to daycare. They went to Aunt Diane's house, and today I have my own Aunt Diane. And that's just, you know, the blessings of this program. So, anyway, embracing empathy, right? So I got sentenced to 8 years. In prison, I did 2.5 years, and when I was in prison, I didn't know. Some days I wanted to get out and get my life together. Some days I didn't, you know. But something happened when I got transferred to a treatment center. I said, I do not want to go back to prison. So tell me whatever I have to do, so I do not have to go back to prison. And I did that, and they said, don't get high. It's real simple. Don't get high. If you don't get high, I bet you got a pretty good chance, right? If you work on something in here and change, you know, get clean and change your behaviors, you might not go back to prison. And I've went back to the prisons, but not as an inmate, right? I go in there and I can leave. And that's a blessing too, you know what I mean? I mean, I can't tell you. So I thought when I was locked up, I was so hopeless, right? I thought I was never going to go back to school ever. And today, you know, I'm back in school. And it's, I'm not a teacher. They wouldn't let me teach, you know, because I do have a felony on my record. It was an armed robbery charge that I had, you know, it was an armed robbery, that incident. Just tell my story, right, Tawanda? Okay, just tell my story. So I got to the treatment center, and they said, do whatever you had to do. And my other grandmother, I lost my one grandmother, and I said, if anything happened to my other grandmother, I just don't know if I can make it, you know, because that grandmother, this is a ring that I wear, she unconditionally loved me. And when my parents, you know, because my father molested me, my mother I felt had betrayed me, but my other grandmother, that was the only one, you know, that I felt like I could run to that loved me no matter what. And When I was 30 days into that treatment center, she passed away. And it was so hard. It was so hard. And I sat up in the meetings and I cried. And I just said how I felt, you know, because what I've learned is if I don't share exactly where I'm at, if I didn't sit up there and share that pain, nobody could come to me and say, I understand. You know, I understand where you've been at. I've had people, you know, my grandmother has passed away, you know, that could share with me the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, empathy. You know, they could understand how I feel. And it's crazy, right? Because what I'm going to school for today, the profession that I'm studying, they try to teach us empathy, you know, but I don't have to learn that. Because in here, I think about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. It's without parallel. Is that I can, you know, I understand where you've been. And so I got a sponsor, and I knew, like, I had, after my grandmother passed, I knew I really had to do this program. And not like I did before, you know, not get into a relationship and have him be my higher power. I had to get a higher power in my own understanding. You know, I had to work the steps. I had to apply them into my life. And that's what I've done. So I got a sponsor. I got a home group. I got out of that treatment center. And you know, and I began to work the steps and apply them into my life every day. I went from a halfway house to a two-bedroom apartment, a room in a halfway house, to two rooms, to an apartment, to a house today. I'm happily married. I have a baby girl. I have a job that I got in the treatment center. And what happened with that job is I was honest, you see, and I told them. I said, I'm in this treatment center. I was in prison. I haven't worked, you know, besides, you know, in the treatment center, I mean, in the jail. I said, I haven't had a job, you know, in a while, and I just need a chance. I just need somebody to give me a chance, and I'm willing to work. And they gave me a chance, you know, and I still have that job today. It had been 6 years since I've been out, and April 10th was 6 years on that job. And so, I'm sorry. I'm overwhelmed. I am really overwhelmed. So I got out, and I got a home group, and I got a sponsor, and I got a network. I go to meetings in the Annapolis area. It's the Bay Area, but it's the Annapolis. We have our own little sub area in the Bay Area. And we help each other in there. And I was in a meeting yesterday, in a home group meeting, and they were talking about, it made me think about my own home group. And what I love about my own home group is it has an atmosphere of empathy, okay? And it says in some of the literature that I read in preparing for this topic that our meetings have an atmosphere of empathy. And in order to do that, I need to share where I'm at. And in my home group, we share, honestly, where we're at so that other people can help you. And one thing that I really wanted to share about one of my home group members this year, he shared a lot about his relationship with his father. And he would tell me, you know, he used to hate his father. And I could get with that. You know, I could understand. I hated my father. And through him, he has rebuilt. I would listen to him, you know, and I would see him and his father together, and they have rebuilt their relationship. And I listen to him talk about how he's used the steps, you know, to free him from that resentment, you know, and that anger, and work some forgiveness. And it's given me hope, you know, because I understand how he's feeling, you know, and he understands how I was feeling, and he could share his experience with me. And so, like I said, I don't hate my father today. You know, in the step work that I've done, in my fourth step, I understand that he has a sickness. And today, you know, we're working on it. One big step. When my brother got married, he had an engagement party, and he invited me up there, and I hadn't seen my father in years. And I knew, you know, I would go up there and my father would be there. And I had to pray. And I remember that that I've read something in the basic text that it said, and I believe it's in the 11th step. And it said that something about when you pray, a remarkable thing happens. A remarkable thing happens. That we're able to do things, you know, that we never thought were imaginable. Because I never thought that I could be clean in the same room with my father. And I was. You know, I was able to go up there, you know, and I just said, hey, you know, it's like, hey, you know, I didn't hug him. I didn't do anything. And I mean, I cried the whole way up there and the whole way back, my husband will tell you, but I got through it, you know, and God, you know, has begun to heal my spirit, you know. And so then when I got married, not my will, because see, in empathy and like what I read earlier, I have to get rid of my self-will. You know, to really embrace empathy, I have to get rid of my self-will and live a more God-centered life. And I knew that, I knew that it was God's will. I didn't really want my father at my wedding, but I knew that it was God's will that I should just mail the invitation back. Just mail the invitation. And I did. And for one moment, and I remember when I was walking down the aisle, you know, for about 2 seconds, I was happy that he was there. You know, I just knew in my spirit, you know, in my spirit, it's like when you, for me, you know, when I know I'm doing God's will, when I can feel it in my gut, you know, that's what I call it, my gut. I knew I did the right thing. You know, and I remember when I was at the reception and my father was standing there and I see my sponsor and I just looked over at my sponsor. I said, that's my father. And she just said, yeah. She just nodded her head. And I took a picture with him, you know, and that was that. And God, you know, started to continue to heal my spirit. You know, because what I realized is that all that anger and resentment, it was weighing me down. You know, it was hurting me. And this program is about freeing me, you know, freeing my spirit. The freedom, you know, it's so much more that I've gotten than the freedom from active addiction. I've gotten the, you know, ability to free, you know, myself from all that anger and resentment and fear. And so, you know, I had a baby. My husband and I, we had a baby. And I told my brother, I said, you know, when I had the baby, you can let my father know. You know, he can come. He can come to the hospital. He can come and see his granddaughter. And he came. You know, and it was okay. You know, it was all right. And I was for, you know, it's like for a couple seconds, you know, or a couple minutes now, I could just be glad, you know, because I knew that I did the right thing. And this program, you know, it's just amazing to me that now, you know, the joy that I get when I know I'm doing God's will and I'm just not so self-centered. It's just, it's amazing to me. You know, and so once in a while, you know, I'll just like send him a little text or he'll send me a text. And at first I really, you know, I didn't know if I wanted to, you know, be texting. You know, I'm like, I don't know about this texting thing, but, you know, and so that's where we are. You know, I text him, and because God moves my spirit. And I remember, like, sitting in my home group, and when my friend, when his father was a couple, I guess it was like a week or two before he passed away, and I was like, I just felt moved, like I should really just text my father, and I would, you know, and it's just amazing, like the spiritual transformation, you know, that has occurred from working these steps, and, you know, and I just know that it's not me, you know, it's God working in my life, and I always, you know, I kind of feel like, when I share in my home group, when I chair meetings, like, oh, here I go again, talking about my father and being molested and stuff like that. Like, nobody wants to hear that. That's what the disease tells me. But it's not true. It's like I get such It really fills my spirit when somebody says, thank you for sharing. You know, that meant so much to me. And then it touches my spirit even more when somebody wouldn't share that in a meeting, when they come up after and say, you know, I could never have shared that. You know, thank you for sharing. You know, you were so brave. And, you know, I know I've gotten the most growth in here when I walk through the uncomfortable feelings, when I do things that, you know, I don't want to do. You know, that's the third step for me. I made a decision, you know, to walk through the fear and just to go on. And, oh, good. I'm just overwhelmed, but I don't know. I'm really glad she gave me this 5-minute warning. Because I've shared my story. I mean, life today, this program, it's just amazing. And I guess if I can say anything to sum it up, it's that my darkest days, you know, my darkest days, when I thought I didn't even want to live, I am so grateful for, you know, because it gives somebody else hope. Like I said, that nobody else is greater than anything else. It's just the therapeutic addict, you know, really understanding, you know, how somebody else feels. And I'll say this one last thing. There's a guy in my home group, and he would share this, something that I think he heard his sponsor share, about how there is just an infinite amount of feelings. You know, everybody's felt anger. Everybody's felt happiness. Everybody's felt betrayal. You know, the situations might be different, but we can all relate to those same feelings. My name is Becky. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. At this time, we would like to thank Arthur and Becky for sharing. And we do have a few minutes before the meeting is over. So before we open the meeting up to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the podium one at a time. Also, keep in mind that there may be others who want to share. So the meeting is now open.
Good afternoon, y'all. My name is Mark, and I'm blessed addict. I just want to share that this is my first time at the convention, and I have 42 days.
I'm an addict named Movita. Here visiting from the Philadelphia area. Welcome. Glad to be in the area and at this convention. We've been having an awesome time here. I want to thank Becky and Arthur for sharing, man. This has been an awesome, awesome, awesome meeting, man. You know, and I think that's one of the things, like, prior to coming here, you know, I had empathy, you know, as a child. And I can relate both of y'all stories because I come from 5 generations of addicts, you know. And my family sold drugs and ran speak, so I did what my family did. And, you know, the disease of addiction takes you places that you never, ever, ever in your wildest dreams thought that you would arrive at. You know what I'm saying? But I know for me, like, when I got here, hearing other addicts share their experience, strength, and hope allowed me to begin to feel human again, because the disease took that humanness away from me. You know, and hearing other people's experience, and they say we all get a turnaround here. You know, and I'm talking about being here and hearing other people's experiences, even though I may never have had that experience myself, but being able to like genuinely feel for that other individual is like God working on your spirit to heal you, to like bring you back to your humanity. And I'm telling you, I remember coming in the rooms and hearing women, because look, when I got clean, I only had one reservation. One reservation. I got clean by way of TWA, thoroughly whipped ass. And, you know, when the smoke began to clear, I was 28 years old, living in a family home, 3-bedroom home, living out of one room in filth and squalor. And the smoke began to clear, and there were these 4 children. And I remember my only reservation was, if something happened to one of my kids, I'm smoking. You know, and I'm here to tell, if you knew, walking to Narcotics Anonymous, I want to thank the young man that came up and said he got 42 days clean. This joint work. I'm going to tell you, I could never stay stopped until I came to Narcotics Anonymous. But I'm talking about on January the 13th of 2011, my youngest child, I have 4 children, my youngest child, my 18-year-old son, Charles, was killed in a case of mistaken identity. And I had 16 years clean. And this program has given me the ability to show up for me and for others and for my children. And I remember I had been hearing women in the rooms sharing about losing their children. And I remember, like, you know, because we all come around here and we're thrust together. Because I don't know about nobody else, but there's some people in the rooms that I wouldn't even be friends with, you know, if it weren't for Narcotics Anonymous. But we talk, no, for real, we talk about empathy. And I remember this one woman that I can't stand sharing about her son being killed and how I sat in the seat and I cried like a baby. And I went over to her and hugged her afterward, and then I got a turn. You know what I'm saying? And one thing I realized is, like, because I lost my mind after that, y'all, you know, briefly. But one thing I realized is that God does not give us our experiences for ourselves. He don't give us, like, because you're going to have storms. Just because you get clean don't mean your life is going to be hunky-dory. Everything going to be okay all the time. Some stuff going to come up. You know, people say life showed up. Life ain't show up. I showed up. Because while life was going on, I was on the floor, behind the door, skitzing. So I guess that's my time. But I just want to thank God, and I want to thank you people for teaching me a new way to live, for allowing me my humanity. Because that's what empathy is. Empathy is to be able to feel for another person regardless of who they are, where they come from. You know, that's why we say, newcomer, come in. We'll hug you as you are. You can come from under the bridge. You can come from out of that dumpster. We don't care where you come from. We're going to love you till you learn how to love yourself, because somebody did it for us. Thanks for listening.
Well, the meeting is still open, if anyone else would like to share.
Hi, my name is June. I'm a recovering addict. This is my first time coming to a marathon. And I know a couple faces in here. And I love you for sharing. I learned a lot, right, in this process. You know, how you sitting there, my first time to the marathon, right, and God got you just sitting there, listen, right. The message might not be for you, but something in the story is about you, you know. Before I came here, I was downstairs, right, and this lady from Philadelphia, right, and I'm ready to do my first step, so I'm a newcomer, you know. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening, and she broke down the first step. And I'm sitting there crying, you know, crying, because I know when I was growing up, right, I didn't have these plans to use drugs, even though my whole sisters, my two sisters and my three brothers, my family was an addict, you know. And I realized that it's not about me, it's about me to help someone else, you know. I got 8 kids. I abandoned all 8 of them, you know. And on my last run was on my youngest daughter's birthday, you feel me? And I was sitting there calm as, you know what, police, army, you know, the shells, the guns there, house cleaners, bad. I'm sitting in this to Mary J. Blige like ain't nothing happened, you know. But at the end, I was so happy. I say to all my peoples from Annapolis, how are my sisters and brothers doing? And left it alone, and I ain't been back since. But I'm learning from at the end, and learning about myself to learn about these 12 steps so I can help someone. But I learn a lot from the newcomers. I learn a lot from the predecessors. I learn a lot from everybody because I love everybody in the fellowship. And my recovery is very important, you know. I used to always hear about these conventions from my cousin sitting in the back, you know. I would go in, out, go into meetings and don't, you know. But I realized that I had all the help to help me to stop using. But I thought drugs was my best friend. But I realized today I had a lot of help, you know. Even though when my kids got removed from me, I was in the bottom of the pits of the hell, you know. But I'm out of the pits of the hell today, you know. I got my kids back, you know. I'm building a relationship with my sons in foster care, you know. But I just wanted to share that right. I'm really enjoying this marathon. It's my first time. Don't pick up and just keep coming back. Thank you.
Hi, family. My name is Claudette. I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I just wanted to share real quick that thank you, Arthur, Becky. Both did a great job. I, too, was a victim being molested as a child. And so I could definitely identify with what you shared. And it wasn't my father, but, you know, he was my mother's boyfriend for a number of years. And, you know, something about those people, they know just how to manipulate you the right way and get under your skin and do what they do, you know. And by the time I got to Narcotics Anonymous, well, let me just kind of qualify myself. I'm coming into my 5th year of recovery. But I was here. I'm the addict that relapsed with double digits and, you know, allowed the money, property, and prestige to divert me from my primary purpose. You know, and I forgot all the people that, you know, walked me through this process when I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in 1992. And nowhere in the literature does it say that you can, okay, you've done all the steps, you know, you've worked the program, it's okay now, ride off into the sunset and live your life. Nowhere in the literature does it say that. And on the topic of empathy, you know, it says that the only way we get to keep what we have is by giving it away. 1 year ago, today, April the 1st, I buried my mom. And that was the hardest, probably the most challenging thing that I've had to do was to watch her die of cancer and bury her. Being the oldest of 5 kids, and it was very difficult trying to make her last days as comfortable as I possibly could, you know. And I just thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. I was here for the convention last year in spite of my grief. And you people kept me in good spirits. You know, it wasn't a moment, you know, where I had to, you know, be stuck in that grief-stricken process. And thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, because I'm back here again this year, and I'm in a much better place, you know. one thing for sure, I told her in the end, my mother died with 18 years clean. I said, you know where you're going and you know who you're going to be with, so I'm all right with it. I'll see you when I get there. And with that, I'll keep coming back. Thanks for letting me see.